This is the podcast for August 31st, 2012. It's not safe for work.
Recorded live from the inevitable post-convention letdown and strip club, it's the Professional Left with Trip Glass and Blue Gal.
And we watched so much convention this week that we both caught Mitt Romney's cold.
We did.
We apologize if there's, although I'm running on adrenaline right now, I'm doing okay.
Blue Gal's on the upside of the curve. I'm on the downside of the curve.
Yeah, he's getting over it, and I'm just now needing to go to bed. So we'll get over it, but I apologize for any sniffles you might hear.
Although when Blue Gal is feverish, she's very entertaining. So we're just going to let her talk in kind of a semi-hallucinatory DayQuil kind of induced, you know.
As long as I don't start talking to an empty chair, I'll be all right.
Yeah. Oh, Lord. Well, we really do need to get to that. But first,
Mitt Romney's taxes.
Yeah.
Because we're not, no matter what. And this goes back to discussing how we find vocabulary.
Yes.
Because there's just been so much crazy shit this week, like with Rush Limbaugh talking about sandbagging New Orleans with bags of money so poor people will come and fish it out.
Uh-huh.
And the Donald. Where did the Donald go? I didn't see the Donald at all.
He was there. You know he's there.
Okay. Well, yeah. Whatever. I don't care about the Donald. I don't care about Rush Limbaugh. I don't care about Todd Akin. I don't care about Paul Ryan.
I care about
Mitt Romney's taxes.
We care about every one of those things, but every time another batshit crazy things come out of their mouth,
crazy.
The proper answer is, that's great. We'll get to that in a minute, but what about Mitt Romney's taxes?
Yep.
Let's see those fucking taxes, shall we? And you and I both saw this happen a few times in the weeks preceding the convention. It's all the reasonable people, the very serious people said, you know, okay, if we could just put these peripheral unnecessary issues, the fringe issues like birtherism and taxes. Like, no, I saw what you did there, though. You created an entirely false equivalence between a crackpot nut job racist theory that's been powering your party for 3 years and the completely legitimate request on the part of every voter for the last 40 years to see a presidential candidate's tax returns. Those are not equivalent in any way. And the fact that your candidate is terrified to release – the only thing on his resume is rich white business guy. And the fact that the rich white business guy is terrified to let honest, hardworking Americans see his taxes should tell you all you need to know about Mitt Romney.
Well, and we got a really good picture, a glimpse inside this whole tax picture from Mitt Romney from the New York Times this week. And I copied this link over to our Facebook page. Tax credits shed light on Romney, period. Tax credits shed light on Romney is the name of the article. And I really learned something from this article. I'm going to read this two sentences from this article.
Yeah.
First of all, let me just say Mitt Romney wrote off a lot of taxes that he had paid to foreign governments. And the two sentences are, foreign tax credits are highly prized because they reduce tax liability on a dollar-for-dollar basis. Every dollar of credit is a dollar in tax saved, unlike deductions, which reduce only taxable income, and then you pay taxes on them is the point.
Mm-hmm.
If you pay a dollar to Switzerland or the Cayman Islands or wherever in taxes and you're wealthy and you have this whole gaming situation with your taxes, then you take a dollar off your taxes after you figure out how much tax you owe the United States. You take that dollar off. So it doesn't matter how much how high taxes are in Switzerland, because you're going to get that dollar back from the United States. And if the Tea Party finds out how much Mitt Romney is subsidizing foreign people in Europe and their healthcare systems with
their socialism,
taxes, and that he's taking that off American taxes and expecting Americans to make up the difference in terms of, you know, the deficit and everything.
It won't matter in the slightest.
Well, it won't matter in the slightest to the Tea Party.
To them.
But
exactly.
It could really agitate certain people to make some changes. And to me, it's just a heinous, heinous form of real disloyalty to the United States.
A teabagger will high-five you if you figure out a way to cheat that goddamn federal government. They have that old Confederate.
But what about the federal government in socialist Switzerland?
You snookered those goddamn bureaucrats in Washington out of a dollar. Good for you.
I think you're talking to imaginary Tea Party or just like, I'm sorry, I think you are. Just like Clint Eastwood talked to imaginary Obama.
No.
Because I think there is a real hatred of foreigners among the Tea Party, and they're going to say, look, he's paying taxes. He's just paying them to a foreign country instead of to pay for our military.
Well, we'll have to disagree.
You can make that case. I think you could make that case. I think a conservative could make that case.
Yeah, but they never will.
They would during the primaries.
Yeah, primaries are over, darling.
Isn't that nice?
Yeah. But this is the part about this that, you know, because I'm not a tax expert, so I don't need to know any of this. But no, this is not a way of reducing your taxable income on which you will then calculate how much you owe, every other normal taxpayer.
Exactly.
This is calculate how much you owe, then start whittling that number down dollar for dollar with every money you paid to Switzerland or the Cayman Islands.
Well, and I thought when Ann Romney said, oh, we pay a lot in taxes, that she was talking about property taxes in the United States. It turns out she's talking about foreign taxes to Switzerland and the Caymans and every place else that he's invested in overseas.
And remember, this is all legal.
And it's, but that's the point. If it's legal, when people start to realize how much they're being snookered by the super wealthy that are just paying taxes, you know, overseas to foreign governments, and look, they can afford health care for all their people because Mitt Romney is, we are subsidizing those governments with our own tax policy.
Well, this is again where you and I respectfully part company, because any sentence that begins when people begin to realize ends with me going, come on.
I agree with you. And that was one thing that got me really depressed today. This week, one of our favorite podcasts that is not the Professional Left Podcast is Liberal Oasis. And I've been catching up with them, Bill Scherr and Tracy Olson. And I was catching up with podcasts and listening to Bill Scherr talk about Medicare.
Yep.
And him saying, well, you know, by this time, Medicare recipients realize that their benefits aren't being cut, that they're actually getting more benefits because the donut hole is closing and they're getting annual checkups from
Thanks to Barack Obama. Right.
And as I'm driving home, listening to this and realizing he is assuming a sane, logical electorate. And I'm to the point where it's not just that I have lost trust, as Chris Hayes says, in elite institutions. I've lost faith in the American electorate. And you said, what did you say to me last night? Welcome to adulthood or something like that?
Well, I think I said something like, once you start understanding the illiteracy, the end of your faith in the American electorate is the beginning of wisdom.
Oh, wow.
And I'm not saying the electorate generally, because I don't believe there is a literate, thoughtful, math-driven, fact-driven electorate out there. They're called liberals. Always have been, always will be. There is a massive counterweight to the forces of enlightenment called Republicans. Superstitious, stupid as the day is long, ass-hatted, bigoted, completely barbaric.
I know a lot of Republican libertarian types who want to keep their own taxes low and play golf. And really don't give a rat's behind about abortion. That's not going to affect them. And gay marriage, whatever. And they're college educated and they're well educated and they're bankers and they're this or that. And they want to play golf and have low taxes. And they're pretty just self-interested people. I don't think they're barbarians. I think they're operating completely within their own privileged self-interest. And that's not to be applauded.
Sorry, they're German industrialists.
Yeah.
Who don't really care what's happening down in the slums.
Yeah.
And
don't
really give a shit about what's happening in Poland, because that doesn't affect me.
Yeah.
You know, I'm still making money. Yeah. All
and
those
David
people
Brooks,
that disappear.
And I get that. They read David Brooks and think he's reasonable. Yeah.
And they're good Germans.
You know,
push those people one inch below the surface and say, do you realize that when you vote for Republicans, X, Y, and Z is the logical consequence of your vote? And believe me, their fangs will come out.
Yeah,
because they don't want to be held accountable for the shit they do.
A lot of them voted for Barack Obama in 2008.
Yeah.
So,
well, and again, so we don't have an illiterate electorate. We have 46% who are dug in like ticks in the crazy heap. 40-some-odd% who are liberals who think with their heads.
I think that's optimistic. I don't think there's 40% of us who are liberals.
Well, in the electorate.
Yeah. No, I don't. And I think that's high.
Well, maybe. But there's the tiny bit in the middle who are too stupid to know either way, yeah, and can be pushed around by radio ads who apparently have no concept of continuity or history or what happened yesterday, because these are the same people who couldn't make up their mind between Kerry and Bush in 2004.
Yeah.
And that's
yeah,
where we're right at that moment now where there's a sliver of really stupid, basically cowardly people who have no ability to form, you know, rub two thoughts together and create a third notion. And those people are the people that are being carpet bombed with ads.
Yeah, and I want you to get to the convention now, because
yeah,
I want you to talk about Tom Brokaw. Tom Brokaw. I want you to talk about Tom Brokaw, because you had a lot to say about him. And he really was the as you called him, the new David Broder. He's
watching him and David Gregory contact David Broder on the centrist Ouija board. spirit voices from beyond was just creepy. Was just fucking creepy. One of our listeners wrote us that, you know, I was aware of this meme, this both sides do it meme, but once you start listening for it, holy shit, it's everywhere.
Yep.
No matter what, and really, once you start listening for it, it's one of those things. It's like discovering Italians in hell when you read Dante's Inferno. Once you start looking for...
Or when you read a modern translation of the Bible and notice all the prostitutes.
Yeah, my God, there's a lot of hookers in this book. Every other woman's a hooker.
Yeah.
For what's something to do with the patriarchy, I'm sure. But once you start noticing that somebody off camera is pointing a fucking gun at their head and saying, remember, every time anybody says anything about a Republican that's bad or interpreted as a bad poll number, you're obliged or we'll kill your family to say, but Democrats are just as bad. And they rolled out this waxwork imitation of what Tom Brokaw used to be. It was, Aaron said, you know, well, that's maybe true, but the Democrats were just as bad. And it was just – it was surreal how incredibly hollow and pathetic this once sort of titanic figure of journalism or titanic figure of television has become. He's this shrunken, creepy old man who they wheel onto the set with David Gregory, and he is the new David Broder, because all he does is come on and wheeze about the good old days and talk about conventions I knew and things that happened in 48 and 54 were much better than today. But then it's as predictable as the day is long. There was one exception to this, when Paul Ryan broke the sound barrier for lying.
Yeah, yeah.
You could hear the sonic boom go off across the country like, wait a minute. We have let you people get away with a lot of shit, but even, you know, when you hear me say, even David Gregory had to say, now wait a minute.
Yep, yep. It was this amazing when David Gregory said that. Both of you and I were stunned.
Yeah. And I guarantee you, some very important person in a corporate office will take him aside and put an arm around his shoulder and explain to him to shut the fuck up and do your job, and we'll keep paying for your country club membership. And once again, in a week or two, Newt Gingrich will be back on his show, and I'll be back to both sides doing it. But like those moments in the Iraq War, where things just got, you know, spun horribly out of control really fast, and the lies could not catch up with the reality that was crashing down around us, you could see this sort of look in his eyes, like, holy shit, how do I sell this?
Yep.
I can't sell this. I'm stuck. It's too obvious. I don't have enough whitewash to cover this shit up.
Right.
But that's the only moment where it happened. And I remember you were walking past. We were in the middle of the
we were trying to get three kids fed, bathed, pajamaed,
homeworked
in bed. It's that hour. It's that 2 hour period where it's just
with me dragging a disease vector through the house.
And I walk by the TV and it's during the Paul Ryan speech, and he says something about the debt ceiling being all Barack Obama's
fault.
And I just went,
Barack Obama inherited a perfect AAA credit rating, and by the time he was done, you know, they've lowered it. And you said,
oh my God, he's going to lie about that?
Uh-huh.
And you had a really good analogy for what's going on.
I said, of course they are, honey. This is North Korea. This is what it looks like at a North Korean rally. These people are semi-sentient meat robots at this point. They will believe anything as long as it comes from an OEM, an original equipment manufacturer, as long as it comes from an authorized conservative source, they will believe anything. They are brainwashed. They are not part of this country anymore.
Well, we had an interesting moment on Tuesday, though, with the floor fight and the power grab that went on.
Yeah.
And the only place you could read about it was Michelle Malkin's Twitter stream. I mean,
yeah.
MSNBC pretended it didn't happen. And what happened was that John Sununu, our friend John Sununu, decided that we're going to basically tell the grassroots to go screw themselves.
Yeah, we're done with you.
And we're not gonna seat you if you're not towing the fucking line.
That's right.
So my understanding is that the main caucus didn't get seated. The main delegation did not get seated at the convention.
That's the state of Maine.
State of Maine, yeah, because there are too many Ron Paul delegates there. Mm-hmm. And they had two questions in the Rules Committee, Rule 15 and Rule 12, and one of them was the candidate gets to seat whatever delegates he wants. He gets to handpick all the delegates to the convention, no matter what the election says. And they voted that down. And then they had a second rule that they did adopt that was after the convention, between conventions, the Rules Committee, by a three-quarter vote, can make any rules they want.
Yeah.
So...
So bye.
Bye. And yeah. there were people interviewed who were not Ron Paul delegates who were, you know, I don't know. I don't want to say they were Newt Gingrich delegates, but they were
teabaggers.
They were teabaggers and they were who's the Santorum.
Santorum.
They were Santorum delegates. Yeah, Santorum delegates. That was it. Mm-hmm. Saying, you know, I was all done. I was here holding my nose, ready to support Mitt Romney and no more.
Mm-hmm.
And there isn't going to be a lot of get out the vote efforts. There's going to be suppress the vote. But
between now
on behalf
and
of Mitt Romney.
Between now and November, they'll remember how much they hate blah people.
Yeah, blah people. Yeah, I know.
And they'll
get
out the vote to stop the blah president from helping giving them money to blah people.
Well, there was a lot of that on Twitter. I really was following this GOP power grab hashtag to see what was going on. And there were a lot of people saying, yeah, well, you know, 2016, we're going to take all this back. But yeah, we got to vote out Barack Obama because he's destroying America. And I couldn't believe the number of people, A, who were saying we're going to form a third party, B, who were quoting Glenn Beck still with the 9/12 bullshit.
Sure.
And that's their religion, boy. I tell you, it's something else to see. 9/12, 9/12. We're going back to Glenn Beck. We got to go back to basics. And and the other thing is, as far as Michelle Malkin is concerned, this is a gift to her because she can now say when they lose in November.
Right.
You know, what do we always say when a Republican loses? He wasn't conservative enough.
Enough, exactly.
So now they've got their excuses
ready.
All lined up. You know, we didn't go truly conservative. Mm-hmm. If we'd only nominated a true conservative, we would have won. They said that with McCain. They're going to say it again. Mark my words.
Well, and that's why, you know, this is why the whole way that liberal media approaches Republican stuff, Republican conventions, is wrong.
Yeah.
Because really, I respect a lot of what it does. I love Rachel Maddow and Chris Hayes is awesome. But Chris Hayes is sort of on to something. It's time to stop looking shocked and incredulous every time the Republican base does something incredibly fascistic and stupid and self-destructive. That's who they are.
Yep.
Stop getting shocked by it.
And go back to we want to see the tax returns.
Right. They're never going to change. Yeah. And like I said on whatever it was Wednesday, I think. When Paul Ryan was busy just lying his ass off, it was once you've convinced your base to believe anything, why not just lie about everything?
Yeah,
because they'll believe everything. They believe, and that's where I think this convention was in its own way, and I think all conventions are like this, a perfect deep scan MRI of the GOP's subconscious, because this is where a political party's id just comes boiling out to the surface, and as much makeup as you slap on it and as much as you try to pretend it's not there and put, you know, dancing brown people on the stage to pretend you're not a bunch of racists and find some gay person to float across the stage to pretend you don't hate gays, your subconscious can't be hidden. in the national spotlight for three consecutive days. And what did we see? We saw a party that has dedicated itself 100% to lying constantly all the time because they've learned. They learned from Iraq. They learned from Nixon. They learned from Reagan. They learned from both Bushes. They learned that lying works with these people because that's how terrified they are of the truth. And that's how all in they've gone with the bullshit because they can never admit they're wrong. So you can just lie to them about anything. And number two, you know, Clint Eastwood might have been the greatest act of political genius I've seen since Stephen Colbert savaged George Bush at the press club dinner. Because he was the Republican base. He was the doddering, cranky old man yelling at an invisible president about imaginary issues that he misremembers hearing from Rush Limbaugh.
Mm-hmm. I had a commenter, Tom in Texas, at my blog say, wow, and they were afraid of letting Ron Paul speak? But
I wrote a little poem about it.
Read your little poem. It's so cute.
Yes. You might be familiar with the original poem, but yesterday upon a chair, Clint met a man who wasn't there. How sad it is that Rowdy Yates has ended up as Orly Tates.
That was retweeted over 50 times last night.
It was. And it is, when you look at it like that, that's the voter that Mitt Romney has had the most trouble with.
Yeah.
The cranky, senile, old white nut job who gets all of his information from hate radio and probably spends a good part of his day screaming at imaginary presidents on the radio machine.
Yep.
And then those are the people he needs to come out and cast one more vote for him before they die and the brown people take over.
I want to just point out one of the big lies that Paul Ryan is pushing and that Ezra Klein really needs to kind of snap to it and mention in all of his charts and graphs. He talks about cutting Medicare versus cutting Medicaid.
Yep.
And every senior in America knows that Medicaid is what pays for nursing home care. And that you can be poor and elderly. And so it's not just, we're going to cut health care for the poor, but not for the elderly. No, you're going to cut it for the poor and elderly. And nursing homes are really going to get screwed in this abandon Obamacare thing because...
abandon Obamacare and cut Medicaid.
Right. Cutting Medicaid hurts the seniors a lot. And I have a problem with wealthy seniors... diminishing their wealth on paper and transferring assets to their kids so that they can get on Medicaid. I think that it's terrible that younger single moms get prosecuted for being welfare cheats, but white seniors who have money are encouraged by their congressmen to transfer assets to their kids so that they can go on Medicaid. I mean, when they go into a nursing home, you do that. It's like it's an industry that teaches you how to do that sort of thing.
Yeah.
And I just think that's not fair. But I do understand that Medicaid, if you're broke and old and need to go to a nursing home, Medicare doesn't pay for that. Medicaid pays for that. Mm-hmm. And every senior knows that. So when you talk about cutting Medicaid, you're talking about cutting nursing home care for poor elderly people.
And buried in those numbers, I mean, we lump all of those services together. I do want to continue to focus on the Medicare, Medicaid canard that you're not going to hurt seniors.
Yeah.
One of my pet idealistic hopes for the future, rebuilding this country, getting us back on our feet and getting us back in the middle class, is getting our middle class back on its feet through manufacturing.
Yep.
And that involves an incredibly long series of social and personal and capital investments in lots of places. And it's, you can listen to the last State of the Union address, and about a third of it was this subject. It's something that both conservatives and liberals generally agree on when it's not a political fight. It's something that, but it's something that, is a not quite a magic bullet, but it solves a lot of our problems. And the only way you fund that, the only way you get all those unemployed people or a significant chunk of them retrained, retooled, and ready to go to work in advanced manufacturing or all the jobs that are spun off from that is by expanding all the programs that Paul Ryan wants to kill. Worker retraining, student loans, reinvestment in community college, reinvestment in high schools, all the shit that they want to get all the shit they want to do away with is pretty much the last hope we have of getting people over the hump of entering the 21st century and entering a knowledge-based economy where you need a lot of skills, you need lifelong learning, you need constant retraining to keep up. But it is possible to have a middle class that's prosperous and large with decent wages and decent benefits, but only if we make these wise investments. And those are the very things that Ryan is gutting.
Right.
And it drives me nuts that nobody's talking about it. But
I don't know what Romney was talking about in his speech last night about training for the future. I mean, his speech was really two-faced in so many ways, where there were parts of it that he clearly had retreaded from his Massachusetts days and snuck in there. And then there were things that clearly he didn't even believe. You know, this idea that we threw Israel under the bus. Nobody believes that. And, you know, it was a speech written by committee, pretty obviously. But what does he mean when he – I mean, he's not giving any details. I guess we can't really even argue.
He proved that he did not reproduce by spontaneous generation and that he made babies and loves his children. Cool. Okay, I give you all of that. You had parents. You love them. You have children. You love them. They all love you. That's great.
Yep.
You go to church. Some people at church like you. That's wonderful.
Yep.
Where are your fucking taxes?
Yeah. Where are your
Show me your tax returns.
Yeah.
I can point to several million other people, and that's true of all of them, including the President of the United States, I might add. So where are your fucking taxes, Mitt?
Right.
You want me to trust you? Show me the fucking money or shut up.
You want to talk about the two moving parts of the big lie strategy?
Yeah. Well, and that in debates. So let's start with that. The reason we are back in 2004 territory is that very clearly, the Republican Party is betting this entire election on the big lie strategy, which is just lie, 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 lie. If you vote for a Democrat, your children will die in a nuclear blast. That's Dick Cheney's strategy. John Kerry is a traitor and betrayed the troops in Vietnam. And the big mistake from 2004 was being incredulous about those things for so long. Like, you can't really – who in their right mind would believe shit like that? And then you suddenly notice that undecided group in the middle, they believed it. But the big lie strategy works when it works because it only has two moving parts. One is the person telling the lie. That would be the Republican Party. The second part that is required is to have a capitulating, enabling centrist press that lets them get away with it. And while the first part is something we can't do anything about, they're just a dead loss. They're going to be a dead loss until the day they crawl into their graves. Having that centrist press, having the David Gregorys out there and the David Brookses saying, well, you know, yeah, that might not be true. But, you know, over here, Obama said something that wasn't quite true either. So, you know, it's sort of in the middle and we sort of have both things. Those are the people that we really can visit an unholy amount of pain on. We can really, if we knew who these people were, if we knew who their bookers were, their producers were, their directors were, their media executives were, these are the people who decide that Newt Gingrich gets to get on television and you don't. These are the people who decide what the terms of the debate will be. And if they are permitted to frame the debate away from the fact the Republican Party is simply lying all the time, the Republican Party will win. If they're forced by us to reframe the debate around why are Republicans lying all the time, we will win. And it's as simple as that. So it's a terrific strategy as long as you have a co-conspirator in the media. And
but here's
our
the
job,
problem, I think, with that. And we had someone send us another article from the TV section of the New York Times, which had no comments on it, which I thought was hilarious. Talking about MSNBC as the evil twin of Fox News.
Right.
And so Fox News has moved the 50-yard line to the right.
Of course.
And we can have a network of people who do call them on their lies and who do say this is a lie and who do fact check and so on and so forth. And it's just turned to, well, you know, both sides because there's Fox.
Right.
So I don't know how we get around that. If David Gregory,
I'm talking
and Chuck
about
Todd, and even David
somebody
Brooks
knows.
Were to all go off their reservation and say, look, we can't tolerate this Paul Ryan guy, not only is he lying about his record, he's lying about what he's going to do, and he's lying about past history, and mm-hmm. actually call him out on that. There are still people in the media who are going to say, well, you know, Fox News calls out Joe Biden for his bad statements, you know, so both sides.
Well, I'm
there
what
is
I mean
persistence
is,
to this fulcrum
yes,
having
is.
To be balanced all the time. And there's always a platform for that.
There is. And I remember that Bill O'Reilly used to send out his squads of truth seekers to bushwhack people in the driveway. And it would not kill me if somebody were to approach David Gregory at the grocery store or approach David Gregory as he's walking in and out of shul or approach David Brooks as he's getting in and out of one of his limousines and ask him the kind of question that the woman asked him at the Hammerschmidt Chapel 4 years ago.
Yeah, read this thing you just wrote, or you wrote
here's
12
this,
years ago.
Here's this shit you wrote.
Yeah.
Here's the shit you just said. These two things don't make any sense. Please reconcile your stated belief now that people should be modest in their comments and give other people the benefit of the doubt and shouldn't really, you know, take crazy positions. And this stuff you wrote, which excoriated liberals who didn't support the war. And David Brooks was stuck on camera, because it was my camera, lying.
Yep.
I don't believe I ever wrote anything like that. If you stick a camera – this is the thing that never happens to the moderators. The moderators are never the story. Yeah. Nobody ever sticks a fucking camera in David Gregory's face and says, why do you let Newt Gingrich get away with lying? Because nobody ever approaches David Gregory – at the grocery store with a camera in their hand and says, why do you keep putting this pathological liar on your show and treating him as if he were a guest? Why do you keep letting liars get away with lying? Why do you keep letting them do that? Nobody ever does that. We used to do that.
Well, I don't think David Gregory goes to the grocery store, first of all.
Well, but you know what I mean.
You're not going to get him in public. I mean, you're just not going to get him in public. He's completely insulated.
This is something that we used to do on the left during the Iraq War. We used to confront college Republicans. We used to confront people in public and say, here's what you said. Here's what you did. These things are obviously in conflict. Why do you let – why
haven't
you,
you enlisted? Yeah.
And here's Paul Ryan's latest lie. Are you going to get a, are you going to let him get away with it, David Gregory? Are you going to let him get away with it, Joe Klein?
Yeah.
Are you why is Jennifer Rubin in your paper? Because unless someone, and I'm looking at you, Rachel Maddow.
Yeah. Well, I will say this. She's been really good at saying this is a test for the media. And and so has New York Times economist guy
Paul Krugman.
Both of them have said, this is a test for the media. What are you going to do? And we all know they're going to fail. A certain element within the media is just going to fail that test every time because of money.
Because you and I don't have the platform, but she does and he does. I think it's not enough to say this is a test of the media. This is a test of my colleague, David Gregory.
She can't do that because of money, and she'll be fired if she does that.
That's right.
So,
and now you know what the problem is.
And now
is.
We have a choice. Do we want Rachel Maddow on the air, or do we want her to take that moment and tell the truth?
I would like her to explain. And I'm not putting her on trial. I'm putting anybody on trial. Yeah. I would like her to explain why she can't tell the truth when it's most important to tell the truth.
Well, then she loses her job, even if she tells why she can't tell the truth. Because she'll lose her job. I mean, she'll be Keith Olbermann.
Now, that's a more interesting question to me personally.
Yeah.
So let's move on to debates, shall we?
You think that it's an antique notion that they actually matter.
Yeah, I do. I think they're very entertaining. They provide full employment for political reporters. But I dug out this quote from Hunter Thompson from 2004. Now, you might remember 2004 was the year that George Bush shit himself publicly twice in the three debates he had with John Kerry. Hunter Thompson wrote in 2004, this is one of the last things he wrote before he shot himself. They're not related, by the way. Did you see Bush on TV trying to debate? Jesus, he talked like a donkey with no brains at all. It was pitiful. I almost felt sorry for him until I heard someone call him Mr. President, and then I felt ashamed. George W. Bush absolutely crapped himself in the first debate. He looked drunk and illiterate. The second debate, he looked like he was on speed. Kerry crushed him in the first two debates and beat him, or at least tied with him in the third, and it didn't make the slightest bit of difference. That's what I took away from 2004. It's entertainment. It's bread and circuses for the masses, but it didn't move the needle one little bit. What matters is lying. And people who are permitted to get away with lying will continue doing so until we have a shooting war in this country.
Well, and I don't understand how Mitt Romney's staff then can say we're going beyond fact-checking. That sounds so 2004, by the way.
Yeah.
Oh, we're creating our own reality. We're not the reality-based community like you Democrats are. We're creating our own reality.
Well, and I mean this in sort of a slightly provocative way. In what sense don't you understand why they're saying that?
Well, I understand it because it works with their base, but I don't understand why they have to work so hard, first of all, to get their base to like them. At this point, they are working very, very hard just to get their base to like them. They've given
it's a base
up on
election.
They've given up on everybody else, though. Everybody. Yeah. They aren't going to win. And
it's
this goes back to confirming my theory that Mitt Romney doesn't want to win the presidency.
Well, you know, there's something to that.
There is. And I've decided, too, that the reason he doesn't want to win or the reason he is running, even though he doesn't want to win, is to make it easier for the next Mormon. And that certainly is going to happen. But no, I don't think he wants to be president. I don't think he wants to win the election. I think he wants people to like him. And that's not happening. So,
well,
people on his side of the aisle to like him.
Well, something's going on. And this is definitely a base election in the sense that 2004 was driven by Karl Rove digging as deep as he could into the evangelical base, putting as many ballot initiatives out there bashing gay people to get the wing nuts and the Bible thumpers out of their walkers and into the polls. And all they have to do is win their base and a few percentages in the middle in some swing states, and they win. Now, whether or not he wants it, whether or not they don't want it, if you just look at the strategy, it's working really well. You know, they can come out and say things publicly like facts don't matter. John Kyle did.
Yeah. Yeah. We were talking about that yesterday. You know, this convention was not meant to be a factual statement.
Yeah. John Kyle said something, another, you know, the 1 millionth ball. They should have a balloon drop and a big novelty check for the 1 millionth lie Republicans told in the last 20 years.
You win. You win,
John Kyle. John Kyle lies on the Senate floor and then says, well, I didn't meant that to be factual. He's still a senator.
Well, he's not ready for re-election, though. He's out.
Yeah, but he hasn't been recalled. Yeah. He hasn't been kicked out.
Yeah.
Newt Gingrich could lie out his ass every day of the month, and he'll still be on Meet the Press by the end of October.
I love the fact that he and Callista did the Reagan tribute.
Sure.
Because that's so perfect. And I want to say, I just found out this morning that the Democratic National Committee is planning a Ted Kennedy tribute at the Democratic National Convention, and that makes me sad. I really wish we could just drop the dead people. I mean, if they die, make it like the Oscars. If they died in the past 12 months, go ahead. Yeah. Do a little honorarium thing. Mm-hmm. But this idea of holding up past politicians as somehow, you know, we have to have a tribute to days gone by is, especially if the theme of your convention is forward, and I'm somebody who worked for Ted Kennedy tirelessly.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I really did. I moved to Massachusetts to work for Ted Kennedy and make phone calls for him for his Senate reelection campaign. So, you know, I'm not anti-Ted Kennedy at all, or the dream shall never die in my own heart. I mean that. But the idea of having tributes to dead politicians is really creepy to me.
Well put.
All right.
Well put. I think you're right.
And we need to end this on a hopeful note.
We do.
What's your hopeful note, Driftglass? I'm looking for something. What you got?
Well, I will be mundane and say that anybody who picks up fourth graders after school and stands at the fence and watches them play and jump up and down and come home totally jazzed about learning stuff and totally excited and completely unaffected, unjaded by the world, imaginative and happy, forward-looking, creative, first of all, can't give up hope for the future. And second, has no business giving up hope for the future. The future is going to look really different than the present. It really will, if nothing else for climate reasons. We can fix it or we won't, for resource reasons, technology reasons, scientific breakthrough reasons, lots of reasons. But this is a moment in time that is passing along with a generation of old crazy white people. and in 20 years they'll be gone.
Well, and not only that, I don't think that's the hopeful note. The hopeful note is not in 20 years they'll be gone. Here's my hopeful note. I'm going to interrupt you. Here's my hopeful note.
Please.
Twitter. Twitter last night was amazing. I mean, not only just because of all of the Clint Eastwood stuff, but when Mitt Romney said, you know, we gave Barack Obama a chance after the election, we all came together as a nation to celebrate the fact that Barack Obama was elected. And then he failed us.
Yeah.
And you and I both simultaneously screamed at the TV.
Yes.
It turned out that all of Twitter, all of my Twitter followers anyway, were screaming at the TV and mentioning, you know, 2009 inaugural, you guys were plotting to obstruct him.
Right.
And everyone knows. Everybody knows that.
You know who doesn't know that? The Republican base and the undecideds.
Yeah.
You know who never will know that? The Republican base and the undecideds.
If the undecideds,
matter how loudly we scream,
if the undecideds, though, I think there's a growing solid group of people who are not involved in politics who still watch Stephen Colbert. They're going to be deciding that Mitt Romney's not cool, is a liar, you know, is not worth spending any social capital on, of their own social capital on. And I do believe that we can carry through Twitter and through social media a message of, you're Republican, how embarrassing.
Yeah. Oh, that is the deal closer. It has to be. And this is the part that, you know, I didn't mean to get all demographic and 20 years from now we shall look back on this and laugh. I was sort of wandering in my sort of semi sniffly feverish way towards the, it's only the sixth round. It's only the seventh inning.
Yeah. Yeah.
We haven't had our convention yet.
Yeah.
We got a real good speaker, a guy named Barack Obama. He's out of Illinois. He's kind of, you know,
he's a young guy.
And the problem, the fun part, the best part about in debate, you know, I was a first affirmative in debate because, you know, I can speak with a beautiful voice and I can measure and modulate and I can make arguments and you give us that speech. But really, I liked coming on second because once your opponent is done, everything's laid out in front of you. I mean, the Republican Party has laid out their entire there's this part from The Lion in Winter where Richard and the young king of France are talking back and forth. And the king of France is bragging and he's saying, you know, Richard's saying, what will you do if I attack? And he says, I'll surrender. You're old. I'm young. I can wait. Blah, blah, blah. You're going to get tired, et cetera. You know, what kind of courage do you have, lad? The title kind. It comes and it goes. And it's this wonderful exchange at the end of which Richard just turns around and says, thanks, and leaves. And the king of France, young king, wants to know, well, we're not done here. He goes, oh yeah, we are, because you've burbled away every bit of your strategy and I've told you nothing. I know how your mind works. I know what you will and won't do. And to these aged eyes, boy, that's what winning looks like. The Republican Party in three days time has burbled away every bit of strategy they have. Yeah. And we haven't even gotten on the field yet.
Yeah.
So I'm not exactly.
There's an advantage to going second.
Oh, God. God, yeah.
Yeah.
And all you have to do is play. I mean, really, if you took 4 days and just played Paul Ryan's lies over and over again, and everybody in the audience shouted, liar.
Yeah. Well,
liar. Like
Dave Letterman did. He had that red beep. Lie. Lie. Yeah. Lie.
That is, you know, I mean, I assume there'll be something slightly more sophisticated than that. But. Really, the Republican Party laid out what its plan is. It's going to appeal to crazy old white guys like Clint Eastwood, and it's going to lie a lot. And it's going to hope to God you don't ask it any specific questions because it doesn't have any answers, so it'll lie some more. That's the whole strategy.
Yep.
And you have the entire White House, the entire political machine of the Obama administration, lots of money and time and talent devoted to pulverizing that. And you know what I have noticed?
Yeah.
Unlike many, this is something John Fugelsang said.
Yeah.
The reason you're not familiar with whatever ad he was referring to is this is possibly the first time in a generation you've seen a Democrat fight back hard.
It was the Cayman Islands one, the one where he was singing,
yeah.
where Mitt Romney was singing.
Oh, yeah.
The Beautiful. Yeah.
The reason this is unfamiliar is
this is two generations. Two generations you have not seen Democrats fight back. And I have noticed, too, that this Obama campaign has decided that when the Romney campaign complains about a punch, the thing to do is punch again.
Right in the same spot.
Right in the same spot. Like, ow, you hurt my fifis. Boom.
Yeah.
Really? Does that hurt you? Boom. Does that hurt
you? And every time Sean Hannity opens his mouth to complain, that's where we're going.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. I want to just finish by talking about the girls' haircuts.
Wow, you're good.
I know. I took the girls to get a haircut last weekend. And by the way, thank you very much again for the cupcakes. And also, we had another listener send us a box of cupcake mix and cupcake frosting and cupcake decorating materials. And we have a long weekend coming up. They don't have school on Monday, and we're going to make cupcakes this weekend. So thank you very much for that. But I took the girls to JCPenney to get their haircut because in the month of August, JCPenney had free haircut day for kids sixth grade and under. And the thing is, I wasn't sure that we were eligible for that because we always get our haircut. The girls always get their haircut at JCPenney. So I said, you know, this is probably just for new customers, right? And the lady said, no, anybody can come. Come on in. And we're in our computer. Great. We'll put you up and make an appointment. And so I took them in for their free haircuts. And I wanted them to get the same kind of haircut that they always got. And the poor women that were working the haircut stations at JCPenney said, we can't do this. This is free haircut day, which means we've got 15 minutes to cut your daughter's hair.
Uh-huh.
And I said, so you can't wash, you can't blow dry, you can't do anything to style it. You're just basically throwing a kid in a chair, moistening their hair and lopping it off. That's it. And they said, and they were exhausted. I mean, we went in the afternoon on Sunday, and they had been doing kids' hair since 10 o'clock in the morning, four kids an hour.
Uh-huh.
And I thought, well, okay, free haircut, you get what you pay for, right?
And they did
fine. And the reason that we go to JCPenney is they're wonderful with the kids, and they've always been wonderful with the kids. So we will go back again and pay for a haircut. And we got what we could get there today. But the thing that really, really struck me about observing this whole operation was nobody. We were there ahead of time. We saw three people getting their haircuts and leaving, and then we were up next. Nobody tipped the haircutting gals.
Yep.
Nobody. Of six people sitting in those chairs, nobody gave a tip. They just said, thanks for the free haircut, and walked out. And these women who were cutting little kids' hair since 10 in the morning were working their asses off, four haircuts an hour. And, I mean, we gave our normal tip that we would ordinarily give if we had paid for a haircut to these hairdressers. And these two hairdressers who cut the girls' hair gave my girls a hug, because I make the girls take the tip to the hairdresser, gave them a hug and said, God bless you. And we're just touched that we had remembered to do that. And so,
because it's work
and
it's labor,
it's working class women who have a skill, who are bringing that to the operation of getting the kids' haircut. And it's hard work and dealing with children and dealing with moms, and it's long work and it's women's work, unfortunately, in most cases. And they deserve to be acknowledged for that. And so I tie that to the podcast and I say, speaking as a skilled woman who does work, and as you're a skilled man who brings all you have to this table every week, especially if you listen to past podcasts and get caught up and you're one of the hundreds of listeners we have who are listening to this podcast a month from now or after the election, and you're hearing my voice now because we're that good that you have to catch up, tip your podcaster. $5. Tip your podcaster. It really makes a difference to us. And as we always say, you can listen to our podcast anytime for free. And it is free. And you walk in and you get it for free and you walk out. But tip your podcaster. It's really... it's work that we do, and we appreciate that you support that work and acknowledge that it is work with your $5 contribution. Thank you very much. And you can listen to our podcast for free at our website, professionalleft.blogspot.com. At our Facebook page, I'm Frances Langham on Facebook. And by the way, 8-year-old daughter appears at the end of this podcast today. She was jealous that middle child got on the podcast. So listen to the end and you'll hear the youngest talking. We're on iTunes and through our fabulous app available at the iTunes Store. We're on the amazing Stitcher Radio, and we are on Netroots Radio at netrootsradio.blogspot.com from 6 to 7 p.m. Pacific and 9 to 10 Eastern Saturday nights. We appreciate so much your contributions. You can contribute to our podcast at our PayPal button at our website, or you can mail us a letter and or contribution at our P.O. Box, which is P.O. Box 9133, Springfield, Illinois, 62791. Our email address is proleftpodcast@gmail.com. Please write us. We love to hear from you. Every week, we post to our website and our Facebook page an Internet Kitty, and this week's Internet Kitty is Mishnah, and Mishnah is another tortie. We have a lot of people who have tortie kittens, and Mishnah is beautiful. She has a black side of her face and a tortie side of her face. She's kind of two-toned, and a very beautiful kitty. We're glad to have her up at our website. If you wish to send us an Internet Kitty, just send it by email to proleftpodcast@gmail.com and put Internet Kitty on the subject line of your email so that we don't lose your Internet Kitty. Feel free to write us. We love hearing from our listeners. And be aware that if you write us at any address, we reserve the right to read your email on the air unless you say otherwise. So, Driftglass, how are the Internet Kitties doing this week?
Well, Blue Gal, the Internet Kitties are praying that the DNC has had the good sense to book hologram Lee Van Cleef.
Let's think about living. Let's think about loving. Let's think about the hooping and the hopping and the bopping and the loving, lovey-doving. Let's forget about the whining and the crying, the shooting and the dying, and the fellow with the switchblade knife. Let's think about living. Let's think about life.
This podcast is recorded under a Creative Commons license, copyright 2012, Driftglass Blue Gal Podcast.
I am the daughter of Francis Langham. My mom's a podcaster, and
tell her how old you are.
I am 8 years old.
Why are you talking like a British lady?
I don't know why. I'm talking like a British lady. But I do not speak British, for your information. Ho ho ho.